As we look at the word goal, I should bring to your attention the fact that some two generations of Americans have grown up in almost complete ignorance of gold. They neither appreciate gold as a precious and valuable metal, nor do they understand or appreciate gold's indispensable role in protecting the economic and political freedom of man in a highly organized society. And so this is the topic I would like to address myself to in this session, and we will have some question and answer period afterwards if you have any questions or some comments you would like to make. I would like to focus our attention on the fact that gold is a very valuable commodity for the safeguarding of a people's economic independence. But first we might look at gold and ask, well, what is gold? And I would answer, well, it depends upon whom you ask. A chemist would explain that gold is a heavy metal that has an atomic weight of 197 and a density of 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter. It has a melting point of 1,063 degrees centigrade, and it even boils at 2,600 degrees centigrade. And it's been known to man since prehistoric times, and modern man has assigned an atomic number of 79 to this precious commodity that we call gold. Well, an economic historian would give a different view of gold. He would say that it is a precious metal which men during all ages and in all parts of the world have valued more highly than any other metal. And because of its unique qualities, gold, since the early dawn of history, has served man both as a dependable medium of exchange as well as a storehouse of value. And we find that men, while they may lose faith in governments and in the money that governments create, that man in the history of mankind has never lost faith in gold as a medium of exchange or a storehouse of value. Now, some people regard gold as a rich man's commodity. They think that the right to own gold is something that would benefit rich people better than poor people or an ordinary working man. But I don't agree with this view. I regard gold as man's great economic equalizer. Gold allows the poor man that has it to bargain as an equal with the rich man. And gold, just to show, has been a faithful servant to everyone who has relied on it in time of need, be he king, merchant, working man, or so forth. The man who lacks gold during periods of chaos and economic and political upheaval often is forced to rely on the fragile mercy of his fellow men, which often breaks down under the stress of adversity. But the man that had gold could purchase food, maybe secret passage for his family in times of need. Now, in looking at gold, we could also look at it biblically. The biblical scholar would substantiate the testimony of the economic historian in favor of gold, but he would add still a richer dimension. He would say that gold is the first metal to be mentioned in the Bible, Genesis 2, verse 11, for instance. And it is the only metal that is mentioned before the fall of man, believe it or not. And the mention is favorable. In Genesis 2, 12, the Bible says, "And the gold of that land is good." Isn't it interesting that God's word should have something favorable to say about such a commodity? Gold is next mentioned in Genesis 13, verse 2, where we are told that Abraham became very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. Interesting, isn't it? the view that the Bible gives as gold. This highly prized commodity is mentioned so often and so favorably in the Bible that we can't help but secure a favorable impression of it when we read the Bible. More than once, the kings of Israel and Judah used gold from the temple to buy military protection from surrounding kings. Sometimes God didn't want them to do this, but we're looking at the economic use of gold. It's interesting to note that the favorable mention of gold spans the entire Bible. Gold is mentioned in the second chapter of the first book of the Bible, Genesis 2, as we indicated, as well as the second last chapter of the last book, Revelation 21, where we are told that the holy city and its streets will be paved with gold transparent as glass. Now, why do I mention that? I simply mention it to point out that gold, from a biblical perspective, seems to have God's approval. So let's not look down our nose at a commodity called gold. Well, we might ask, why does gold have value? Some proponents of gold have become really overzealous, and they make the mistake of claiming that gold has an intrinsic value. That is, to claim that gold has value in and of itself. And of course, I have to disagree with this, because the Bible teaches that value, like beauty, exists only in the eye of the beholder. The value of anything is imputed by us into it. Nothing has intrinsic value. Nothing has intrinsic value because all value is imputed. And we get this from the Bible too, because the Bible tells us that he set his love upon Israel. The Bible teaches that before the foundation of the world, God set his love on us. In other words, he imputed a value on us before the foundation of the world. And this is the same economic process that man engages in when he imputes value into things. Individuals value gold by the utility that they can derive from it. They see a use, the use that gold can be put to, and they can see a value in it. This is where the value of gold comes from. But individuals also value gold for things other than its utility. I've mentioned before that gold can be useful in social situations where people can use gold to buy secret passage out of a country where the people are being oppressed. We can buy food for a man and his loved ones during periods of economic and political chaos. So we see that gold is warmly beautiful, that it's durable almost to the point of being indestructible, that it never rusts or dissolves, and it lasts almost indefinitely, long after other metals have become corroded or oxidized. Now, of the common acids, only a mixture of concentrated nitric acid and hydrochloric acid, called agua regia, will dissolve it. And even strong acids, when used alone, will not affect gold. It always retains its beauty. Well, we have to remember that God created gold. We might ask, well, why is it that God created a metal with these properties? Gold is one of the most ductile and malleable metals known to man. It can be melted and shaped without harm, and it can be hammered into exceedingly thin leaves, almost about 12,000 leaves to the inch, and that's an awful lot. When allied with other metals like silver, it becomes somewhat harder, but it still retains its beauty. Finally, the natural scarcity of gold assures that it will always be prominent in man's comparative scale of value. For some psychological reason, man seems to impute value on those things that are in scarce supply. Remember, I pointed out before that all value is imputed, that value rests in the eye of the beholder. Part what I'm coming to is this, that if we believe in a providential and sovereign God, as I certainly do, and I think everyone here does, it would appear that gold is a unique and precious gift of the Almighty Creator unto man, And let me ask this. Could it be that God gave gold the very physical properties that would cause man to value it, as I have described, because he knew that such a commodity would be useful in preserving man's God-given freedom? Now, humanist skeptics, of course, would say poo-poo. They would look down their nose at such an idea. But I think that we, as Christians, have to consider this very carefully. I will point out that such a thought really is not scientific. It simply goes beyond the scope of science into the more important fields of philosophy and theology. Now, in a later session, I will be passing out, matter of fact, I think we brought some books like this out, and if anyone is interested in getting a copy of these, my beloved wife in the back has got some that she will pass out. But we will see that there is a relationship between economic science and theology. And we'll be discussing this in a later session. Well, a Christian, getting back to our topic of gold, might ask this question. Might say, well, look, I'm a Christian, so my eyes are in heaven, not on earth. You ever heard that comment? Then the Christian might ask, well, why should I then, as a Christian, be concerned about a grossly material thing like gold? And to this question, I would reply that while gold is a material or worldly thing, it has a great spiritual significance that many professed Christians have apparently overlooked. Let me explain this. Christians believe in the doctrine of individual self-responsibility before God. Anyone that doesn't believe that doesn't believe, isn't a Christian, really. They believe that this is what justification of faith and Christian good works are all about, really. That man is responsible before God, first for the choice he makes about Christ, and then once saved, for everything that he does thereafter. And I pointed this out in an earlier section, that the wealth that we call our own really isn't our own, but it's just wealth that we hold in trusteeship to God. And we are self-responsible to God for what we do or don't do with the wealth that we control. So with this idea in mind, let's look at the spiritual significance of gold. If we do this, we see that self-responsibility presupposes the freedom to act. In other words, if you're not free, you're not self-responsible. If you're not self-responsible, you don't have any freedom to act. In other words, self-responsibility presupposes the freedom to choose freely. Without the freedom of choice, man cannot be self-responsible. Now, many libertarians who are not Christians recognize this truth. But there is a deeper spiritual aspect of this truth to consider, and it is this. Now, note this carefully, that the mental act of choosing, which is an internal process, demands an outside or economic guarantee of that action. Have you ever thought of that? That we move about and act in a physical world, that we think on the inside spiritually, don't we? So there has to be some tie between man on the inside and man on the outside. And this is where the role of gold comes into play. Without economic freedom to validate his choices, man cannot be truly free. He cannot truly be a responsible trustee to God for the wealth that he holds during his stay here on earth. And if you doubt this, read the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. And from this lesson, we see that in short, you can ask, how can man be morally responsible for the disposition of goods unless he has economic control over them? And the spiritual significance of gold is that it helps guarantee the outward material base that man needs by his nature to be spiritually free and self-responsible on the inside. That is, to be a self-responsible being created in the image and likeness of his maker. Now, if we look at Genesis 2, verse 7, we come across a very interesting verse. If you have your Bibles, you might turn to it. If you don't, okay. But in this verse, we see where the Lord says, "And man became a living soul." Now, note that when God created man, well, first of all, when God created the world, and don't be offended when I say this, but when God created the world, he was materialistically minded, wasn't he? He created a material universe. So God, in this respect, is material. We all, to an extent, are material. Now, but when God created man, a physical being, he created other physical beings, didn't he? The animals and trees and so forth. But he made man something special. He created man a living soul, and the reference here in Genesis 2:7 means the life part. But the Bible in whole points out that man is a spirit. Now, Tom Rose, do you see a fella here? But you really don't see me. You just see the barrel that walks around that looks like Tom Rose. The real me is the spirit of Tom Rose on the inside. And it is this inner man that makes that thinks and wants to act, but he can't act in the spirit. He has to act only in a physical body. So God established a property relationship between man on the inside and wealth on the outside. And this is the spiritual significance of gold and property, and gold being a very valuable property, in that it helps spiritual man achieve the high moral spiritual goals of God in a physical universe. So think on this, and maybe we can discuss this later if there are any questions or comments that anyone has. Now, keeping this idea in mind, we want to look back to the fact that for most of our lifetime, we have been denied our right to own gold as a valuable commodity. Our own government denied, wrongly so, I will say, our right to own gold. You want to ask the question, why is it that governments don't want citizens to own gold? Well, the importance of gold and its role in preserving man's freedom from civil government is little understood in this age of mushrooming bureaucracy. People today have come to regard civil government as a sort of a father protector and a supplier of all their daily needs, a role which the Bible says belongs to God and God alone. And modern man, in addition to this, has forgotten the most obvious lesson of history, which is this, that more often than not, civil governments have tended eventually to enslave their own citizens under the guise of caring for them. And I tell my own students that we have more to fear from loss of liberty from our own government than from any foreign government. And this is where we should be careful. All you have to do is read the history of mankind, and you can see that history largely is the history of governments enslaving their own citizens. But then we come to an important question, which is this. Who will have the power of the purse? And a look at history shows that the burning, most important issue throughout the ages that man has had to face is this. Who is going to have power over spending the incomes that the free citizens produce through their economic activity? Are the people themselves going to have this power to spend the incomes that they generate and produce? Or are the rulers? And the history of mankind is a tug of war between the rulers and the ruled. The rulers always want to spend what the people produce. Rulers have answered this question by imposing taxes to the maximum that citizens will endure peacefully. And when this point has been reached, they have generally turned to debauching the currency. In olden times, kings used to tip coins from gold coins to silver coins, or they'd call them in and remelt them and mix them with lead and reissue them at their old face values and force people to accept them at that value. There's a very interesting bit of history about Marco Polo when he comes back to Europe in the 13th century after spending some 20 years in the court of Kublai Khan. He came back with a wonderful story that I call the story of the mulberry dollar. The Kublai Khan in China discovered that the inner bark of mulberry trees was a very fibrous and long-lasting substance, and so he nationalized all the mulberry trees and grew a lot of them, and then he would harvest the inner bark of these mulberry trees and cut them up into what we call dollar bills, and he created money. And he forced everyone to turn in their gold and silver and forced people to use this for their money. Marco Polo thought this was such a wonderful idea because he didn't have to carry all those heavy gold and silver coins in his pocket. Well, money made out of paper is convenient to carry about as long as you can convert it into gold. But once the right to convert it into gold is cut, nothing is left to stop the government from printing more and more gold. And had Kublai Khan continued in China another 50, 67 years, something like that, he had found out that Kublai Khan printed so much money from the inner bark of mulberry trees that he inflated the economy and brought it crashing down. And of course, this is the very thing that we are facing with America, in America right now. What's the point? The point is simply this. We learn from history that rulers have tended to enslave the very people they are committed to protect by forcibly relieving citizens of their rightful freedom to spend their own money as they wish. When citizens will no longer peacefully bear heavier tax burdens, rulers turn to the insidious method of stealing purchasing power from the citizens by inflating the money supply. Each new unit of money created by the ruler competes in the open marketplace on an equal basis with the money already held by the citizens. Thus, wealth is quietly and stealthily but surely transferred from private hands of citizens to the collective control of government bureaucrats. And the faster the ruler creates new money, the faster additional wealth is transferred to him from the control of private hands. In effect, private wealth thus becomes socialized. Citizens, as a result, lose the economic control over their own destiny. And we have seen this lesson time and time again throughout history. And I might ask, what do you see going on right now? Aren't the American people losing control of their economic destiny? The denial of our right to own gold way back in 1933 had much to do with this loss. Our national debt back in 1932, which was the year before President Roosevelt, by presidential edict, denied Americans their historic right to own gold, the national debt was $19.4 billion, or about $156 per person. By 1970, some 38 years later, the national debt had soared to a monstrous $384 billion. That's about $1,875 per person. Today, it is over $700 billion, which is more than $3,250 per person. And by the end of this year, it will break the $800 million mark, which will be somewhat close to $4,000 per person. Think of it. Now, the right to own gold, but more than that, the establishment of a gold standard, which limits the amount of money creation that governments can engage in, would stop this trend of excessive spending and increasing debt. Now, why should we be concerned about this, both as citizens and as Christians? Well, this constantly rising debt has been incurred through a very highly sophisticated method of debauching the currency. Rulers don't use the old method of taking coins or remelting coins and reissuing them after mixing with base metal. The method used by modern government-sponsored central banks, in our case, the Federal Reserve System, is very, very sophisticated and difficult to understand. But basically, every new dollar of our mounting debt represents a new dollar of purchasing power that bureaucratic rulers have quietly and insidiously siphoned away from the control of private citizens. And as this process continues, an ever-growing number of once free and independent citizens are seduced into looking to the very bureaucrats who steal from them are their sustenance. The end result of such economic seduction is political slavery. In other words, what I'm trying to say is this. Our government really has been engaged in a massive scheme of debasing the currency and arrogating to itself power and transferring wealth from citizens to the politicians and bureaucrats. It's been, as political favors, they're shoveling this back out to the people and, in effect, seducing people. They're manipulating and controlling the people. And this is not God's plan. God's plan calls for the government to maintain law and order and for the people to go about their activities according to 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2 in peaceful exchange and in self-responsibility to God. And I've given here the historical background of why civil governments don't want citizens to own gold. And it's simply the reason that government rulers want to control rather than to be controlled. Now, I think we come to a very interesting point here. And that is this, that when ordinary citizens have the legal right to take government money, in this instance, the Federal Reserve notes, to the bank and demand gold for it, which rights they do not have now, they, in effect, have only the same option that any poker player has when the stakes get too high for his comfort, the option of cashing in his chips and sitting out on the sidelines until the stakes come down. And really, this is what the gold standard does. It allows citizens to take their government money to the bank, they give you gold, and to take their chips and sit out on the sidelines until the crash comes, and then they've got the gold and they come back in. By cashing in their government-decreed money chips for gold, citizens can indirectly but surely veto the grandiose spending plans of lawmakers and bureaucrats. Let me point that out again. That's very, very important and essential. By cashing in their government-decreed money chips for gold, citizens can indirectly but surely impose a veto on the big spending plans of the government lawmakers and bureaucrats. But rulers, because they want to control rather than be controlled, find it exceedingly distasteful to allow this kind of economic power over their actions to reside in the hands of ordinary citizens. They think that they're smarter than us, so they want to tell us what to do. They don't want us to tell them what to do. So we might ask the question, can gold protect? Now, let me point this out, that basically there are two kinds of control that people have over politicians. One is political control. Every time an election comes up, we have the option of taking the rascals out of office. And in between elections, we can recall them and cause them to be removed from office for wrongdoing. That is what I call the political control that citizens have over government. But now there is another kind of control, and that is the economic control, and it's a very important control. It's the kind of day-by-day control that people have. I might point this out, that control over others, after all, is what the deadly game of politics is all about. And political power rests on economic power. So if citizens are to have any hope of remaining independent from power-hungry individuals who from time to time find their way into office, they must preserve what I call the economic veto over them. And here is how the citizen's economic veto over government can work. Without this day-to-day so-called veto power, it is only a matter of time until citizens surely lose effective political power over the politicians that they elect. And when citizens lack this power, politicians find it relatively easy to seduce them with their own tax money. Demagogic office holders do this by inflating the money supply, by creating new money, and then buying the votes of unthinking citizens by spending the newly created money on vote-getting projects. And this is exactly what's happening in America through our tremendous and massive welfare programs, our various farm programs, our business subsidies. Almost everyone is guilty of trying to get some kind of a handout, and this is the result of it. But when a country is on a gold standard, the amount of money in circulation within the economy is tied to the amount of gold held in the official reserve by the government treasury. And when the government's gold reserve rises, then more money can be created. But when citizens go and withdraw the gold from the banking system and from the reserve, they can bring about, through their individual action, a forced deflation of the economy. And this is exactly the kind of economic power that politicians absolutely do not want us to have over him. In fact, when politicians engage in deficit spending, they must either borrow the money they want to create, or they must create it by inflating the money supply. And this is where the Federal Reserve System comes in. But if you have the right to cash in your chips for gold, your dollar bills for gold, you can reduce the official gold reserve held by the Treasury and force this deflation on. Now, here's the way it works. When some of the more astute citizens become aware of the robbery that the government is engaged in by debauching the currency, they become worried and start cashing in their government-decreed money chips. In this case, they indicated the Federal Reserve notes. And they ask for gold in exchange. And as banks pay out gold, the banks are forced to replenish their dwindling gold stock by withdrawing money from the government treasury. This, in turn, causes what gold reserve is still left in the treasury to be inadequate to sustain the existing money supply. And then banks then are forced to call in loans and thus gradually to restrict the money supply until it again comes in balance with a smaller gold reserve held by the treasury. Now this is a very complicated process, but the important policy point to remember is that when we have a gold standard, it gives the citizen the power as an individual to overrule the grandiose spending schemes of the government bureaucrats and politicians. And as people lose their confidence in public officials, they do this. And this imposes a strict discipline on the spending plans of government, and they don't like it. Now, let's look at a little bit of history here in the United States. And we're going to ask, well, why is it that the United States went off the gold standard? And we need a little history for this. We went off in 1933, but let's go back some 20 years before that, the year 1913. Now, the year 1913 was a black year for the Christian American Republic. We had two constitutional amendments, the 16th and the 17th Amendments, which were passed. 16th was the imposition of a direct income tax, and the 17th was the direct election of senators. Both very bad. But also in that year, we had the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, and we find that the passage of the Federal Reserve Act was allegedly to provide the economy with the so-called elastic money supply. So what we find is that it created an open-end power for the government through the agency called the Federal Reserve System to inflate the money supply. We find that during 1914, 1917, with the First World War going over in Europe, At first, he started selling to the Allies on a cash basis. Soon, all the cash was used up, and there were forces, business, and labor who were in the process of providing those war goods, who had an economic interest. They petitioned Congress, they found the Congress, said, okay, we'll start selling them credit. Well, where did this credit come from? Much of the credit the Allies bought their war goods was provided through our own agency called the Federal Reserve System. In effect, what happened as a result of this is that we aligned ourselves with Britain and France. At first, we started selling on a cash basis also to Germany. But because England had control of the seas, we could only sell to the Allies. Gradually, our interest settled with the Allies. We got sucked into the First World War on the side of England. So you could say that, in a way, the First World War, our involvement in it, is directly related to the establishment of the Federal Reserve System. We find that after the war, from the period of 1919 through roughly 1929-1930, that we inflated our money supply. And we find a number of things happened here. We passed in 1921 the Emergency Tariff Act, which imposed higher duties on imports. In 1922, we passed another tariff act, which imposed a still higher tariff rate. And in 1930, we passed the Hawley-Smoot Tariff Act. Actually, this didn't get passed until after the crash in 1929, but it was introduced and some of the effects were felt beforehand. But the net result of these acts was, of these protective tariff acts, was a decline in foreign trade because foreigners could not purchase our goods and services, our farm products, our manufactured products, unless they were able to sell to us. But with high tariff barriers, they couldn't sell to us, therefore they couldn't buy from us. And another effect was that in order to help finance sales, that we cut off by increasing the tariff, huge amounts of foreign loans and bonds were floated in this country. It was sort of a privately financed foreign aid program. And finally, when no more money could be borrowed privately here by the foreign government, we had a further decrease in the amount of goods that we're sending overseas, and we were approaching the critical year of 1929. Now, let me backtrack just a little here. Go back to the year 1923. We find that the Federal Reserve System stumbled upon a discovery. And they found out that as the agency of the Federal Reserve System, which is called the Open Market Operation, as they would buy and sell bonds, government bonds in the open market, that their buying and selling influenced the level of economic activity. When they would buy a bond, they would receive the bond, they would send newly created money into the economy, it would be a little boost. When they would sell bonds, the people in the nation would get the bond, the government would get the money, and there would be a little deflation after. So from 1923 on, the Federal Reserve purposely developed a policy of trying to manipulate and control the level of economic activity. And after the First World War, England and other nations in Europe went back on the gold standard, but England in 1924 tried to establish itself back on the gold standard at a basis where it could not hold up the pound relative to the dollar. So we followed through our Federal Reserve officials what we call an easy money on inflationary policy in order to help England reestablish itself in the gold standard. This continued until roughly 1928. Our Federal Reserve officials saw that we were in trouble. They found out that they could create new money and inject it into the economy, but they couldn't control where the money was spent. And people were taking this money and spending it in the stock market and in land in Florida. And those of us who were old enough But to read history, we know that there was a real estate boom in Florida that toppled over 1927-1928, and the stock market crashed in 1929. Why did the stock market crash? Because in the middle of 1929, finally the Federal Reserve officials in desperation said, you've got to do something. So they increased what is called the rediscount rate, and it caused banks to call in loans, and they started forcibly restricting money supply that they had been expanding before. And it was this that caused the tumble of prices in the stock market in 1929. And from the period of 1929 to 1932, the Federal Reserve System constricted the money supply by about 30%. And by 1933, we were in the depths of these depressions. Number one, the government cost. It wasn't business speculation. It was government inflation and money supply, followed by a forcible restriction of the money supply that caused the crash, and it was a perverse monetary policy followed by the Federal Reserve System in further constricting the money supply after having expanded it that caused the big dip from 1929 to 1933. Okay, now we find, in 1932-1933, President Roosevelt being elected in 1932, coming off. We find an economist advising him, saying, well, look, you're thinking about following what you call a reflationary policy to push prices up and get us back on the road to prosperity. You can't do that as long as the people have a right to own gold. Because when you create new money and inject it into the economy, people are going to take those newly created dollars, go to the bank, get gold for it, and they're going to deflate the money supply. This is why, in 1933, Roosevelt passed a presidential order denying Americans their right to own gold, and from that time off, Americans couldn't own gold until 1974. But in the meantime, the tie between gold and the money supply was cut. Now, I'm kind of condensing a little history here, just so that you can sort of get a capsule view of it. I have a tape on this where I go into a year-by-year breakdown of this. That is available if anyone's interested in it. But basically, we went off of the gold standard purposely so that the government can control and manipulate citizens to do what the rulers wanted. And they realized that as long as citizens had the economic power to impose their individual veto by withdrawing gold from the official gold reserve, that just couldn't be done. We have a question now, well, can we ever get back on the gold standard? Yes. How? Well, we have taken one step already, and that is in January 1974, Americans, because of the activity of individuals, some of you and some of me, is generating interest in this, the government has now authorized Americans and given them back their right to own gold as a valuable commodity. What we still have to do is to get our country back on the gold standard so that the amount of money in existence is tied to the amount of gold in the official gold reserve and give people the right to draw gold from that gold reserve if they get concerned about government policy. Now, the government rulers are not going to want this. And this is what the battle is all about. With this, I would like to close, and I thank you for your attention. We've got some time here for questions or answers or any comments that anyone would like to make. Yes, sir. The question is, I had mentioned two kinds of control. One was political and the other was economic. What is the difference? Well, by political control, I mean the control that citizens have through the political system. They can, every election, replace politicians or
both them in another term in office. Now this occurs only every 2 years, every 4 years, or every 6 years, depending on what political office we're talking about. Now there's another control, which is a day-by-day control, which I call the economic control, or the veto control. That if we have a gold standard where people can withdraw money from the treasury by taking their government-created money to the bank and saying, give me gold, they can deflate the money supply, and in effect this amounts to a vote of no confidence in the political policies that are being pursued. And it forces a deflation on the economy, and this gives us individually a day-by-day control over politicians. Yes, sir. Yes, Germany is on a gold standard. I think Switzerland is. There are a number of countries that are on a gold standard. Matter of fact, after the Second World War, our people went to Germany, which was devastated, you know, because of the war, and they said, now, we want you to follow the policies, the changing type policies that we are following in America. And the rulers over there, Ludwig Erhard, said, we'll have none of this. We want honest money. We're going on gold standard. And our people wrung their hands in despair and said, you can't do it. And they said, we're going to do it. And of course, we all know what a tremendous resurgence economically that Germany had after the Second World War. And it was because of the honest money policy of the dollar and the gold standard. Yes, sir.
What is buying gold? Now,
can
we almost do the same thing, even though we're not on the gold?
The question is, since we aren't on the gold standard now, what effect does buying gold now do as far as the government policy? None. And this is why the politicians don't mind us having the right to own gold, because you can buy and sell gold without having any effect on the amount of money that they can create through the Federal Reserve System. We must have some kind of a tie between the money that's in existence and some base, whether it's gold or silver or platinum or what have you. The thing that about gold is that on the average, gold has increased in supply about 2% a year. So this limits the amount of money that government can create based on a gold standard. And I say this is God's method of limiting the power of government. The Christians should be aware of that. Yes, sir.
Seemingly, it seems like in the studies, you've had this erroneous concept of economic talking down to the education system, maybe into some private education system. How is this to come about? So effectively that somebody hasn't been able to express another viewpoint.
That's a good question. The question is, how has the miseducation of American youth come about so that people have lost understanding what gold is and how it can be used? The reason is because Christians vacated the field of education. And the burden that I have is to win back the reins of scholarship to Christians. Now, I wrote if you don't mind my mentioning this here, I'll just say, here's a little book called Economic Principles and Policy from a Christian Perspective that I wrote and published earlier this year. The economists, as a profession, looked down their nose on this. They said, what? Economics is a science. How can you bring in such things as the Bible and things like that? And Christians have just very meekly kind of pulled their shoulders in and didn't do intellectual battles with the humanist, secular-minded people. And what I say what we have to do is remove the false dichotomy between so-called science and show that they're including the sciences, including economics and business. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes, the same thing did happen in the field of biology and so-called organic evolution, because Christians, through not relating their Bible to their areas of especially, were afraid to do intellectual body. And I think you just have to take up the point. Yes, sir. That's a good question. The question is, if we went back to the old system, would we suffer another test? Yes. Now, that's a good question. And I didn't have time in my lecture here, but it's on the tape, and we can look back our own history. In 1879, we did go back onto the gold standard. Now, to give you a little history on that, during the Civil War, our government, the Union, financed the fighting of the Civil War, much of it through the creation of money. We created at that time $450 million worth of what we called greenbacks at the time. Now, that doesn't sound much in today's terms, but that was a tremendous rate of inflation for the then existing money supply. As a result, prices doubled and tripled. And after the Civil War was over in 1865, there was a period of about 14 years, from 1865 to 1879, that the money supply was actually held stable or reduced just a little. Prices tended downward as productivity continued to rise, until finally, it was in 1879 that the value of the newly created greenback finally got back on a one-to-one basis instead of the two-to-one basis that it was on before. Now, to relate that to terms today, here's the way we can do it. We can say, well, what is the free market price of gold? We really don't know. Right today, the market price is about $160 or so. Now, if the government would not fool around at all, just let it alone, the price might go up a little or come down a little. But somewhere, there is a price, a free market price of gold. Let's say it's $160. So the government then, once this price is established, could guarantee the that they would buy as much gold offered to the Treasury at $160 net. But also, that they would, for every ounce of gold surrendered to the Treasury, pay out $160. This would be a riskless way of getting back on the gold standard, and from this time on, then, we could nail down the spending plans of our politicians and bureaucrats. So we can get back on the gold standard very easily. The resistance is this question of who is going to control who. They us, or we them. Yes, sir.
What actual percentage of gold do we actually have backing our American currency today?
None. We have at about $42.5 an ounce, about $11 billion worth of gold, which is valued at the market price today. We'd multiply that by about four times, so roughly based on $160 an ounce of gold. Our gold reserve would be worth roughly 45, maybe $50 billion. But there's no tie at all between that and the amount of money in existence in our economy.
Well, that's
our reserve kept. Good question. The question is, where is our reserve kept? We were told it's in Fort Knox. We have people who claim that it has been secretly brought over to Belgium, and from there we don't know where.
I don't know.
I can't answer that.
I don't know. The news has been circulated.
I don't know.
That's why I was making reference to the station
that had great
knowledge.
No, I don't. I just read these various speculation reports. But the question, the very point I see is that there's a growing suspicion of our own government. People, now there's a real healthy saying that the French have. It goes like this. They say, we have gold because we don't trust government. Frankly, I would rather see gold in the hands of private citizens, the same way I'd like to see guns in the hands of private citizens, rather than gold in the official reserve. Because I would trust the judgment and the patriotism of my fellow citizens more than I trust the patriotism and judgment of the politicians and bureaucrats that we now have in Washington. Yes, sir.
People are advocating
by itself, whether this fit in. Well, it fits in this way, in that when governments engage in massive debauching of their currency, of creating newly created money and injecting it into the economy, people realize that it's senseless to hold dollars because it's going to lose value, so they turn, place the money in equities, gold, silver, land, things like that. Looks like we've run out of time. I want to thank you for your coming. If you're interested in having a copy of the book, Free Enterprise Economics, my wife would be happy to give one to you. Thank you and God bless you.